For another view of Ireland, here's philosopher and poet John O'Donoghue.
I live in Connemara in the west of Ireland, and there's no landscape I know that is so dependent on light as Connemara is. When the light is there, the whole landscape is suffused with the most subtle colours, and it's absolutely an incredible glistening of light.
It's the thousands of years old Celtic traditions that inspire John O'Donoghue. Not only stories of giants, fairies and spirits who turn into animals, but a habit of mind, an Irish way of seeing. As concrete to O'Donoghue as the stone slabs of a prehistoric Irish ring fort. His first book, Anam Cara, which means soul friend in Gaelic, explored the ancient teachings of Ireland. His latest book is about our yearning to belong to something bigger than ourselves. He calls it Eternal Echoes. The book draws on the moody landscapes of his native region, the Connemara, which he lyrically describes.
In an instant, the whole place flares in a glaze of pools, as if a kind sun let a red net sink through the bog. Reach down to a forgotten infancy of granite and dredge up a hall of colours that play and sparkle through the smother of bog. Pinks, yellows, amber and orange. Your saffron scarf, filled with wind, rises over your head like a halo, then swings to catch the back of your neck like a sickle. The next instant, the dark returns this sweep of rotting land, shrunken and vacant. Listen, you can almost hear the hunger falling back into itself. This is no place to be. With the sun withdrawn, the bog wants to sink. Break the anchor of rock that holds it up. We are left. There is no one who knows us.
You know, that's an absolutely lovely poem, and it makes me think intensely of Connemara, which is a rocky, craggy, it's as far west as you can go in that part of Ireland. It's bordering on the Atlantic. And obviously, it's a great inspiration for you.
It is a huge inspiration. I mean, I live in a little cottage there in a village in the Gaeltacht, which is an Irish-speaking region, so Gaelic is the language we speak each day. And even though I live on my own, I'm never lonely there because of the theatre of cloud and light that is always changing and transfiguring the landscape. Some days you'd get up, and you know the west of Ireland yourself, Jackie, that it's not overburdened by kind of Californian sunshine. So there's a lot of rain and mist and fog. And some days you'd get up and the fog would be halfway down the mountain and the top of the mountains would have disappeared and the stem or root of the mountain would be glistening under the fog. And I often think that it's an incredible image of the imagination, that you know the top half of the mountain is there, but it's invisible to you. It's a powerful imaginative and mystical landscape.
It's a powerful image, John O'Donoghue, and you're certainly providing evidence as to why people say the Irish imagination is so potent and why Irish talkers are so poetic. You touch on a couple of things, too, in there. The Irish famine in the 1840s, the loneliness of the place. Yeats said this is no country for young men, and you sort of refer back to that in that poem, Slouching Towards Bethlehem. Also, I'd like to ask, your book has been on the bestseller lists in Ireland for a year. Now, some of the mail you've received has been from farmers. Western Ireland can be a lonely place. It's dotted with the cottages of people who abandoned those places during the Great Famine of over 100 years ago. And also, you're receiving mail from intellectuals in Ireland. How is it that this book appeals to such a broad range?
Well, I suppose it points to the fact that there's a great spiritual hunger in our times, a hunger which is, in fact, a new form of consciousness, I think.
Now, you talk about contemporary culture with a kind of, well, with more than just skepticism. You call it isolating, narcissistic. You say it's one of the greatest obstacles to modern friendship. You call it the religion of rush. What is it that you're opposed to in contemporary culture?
Well, my read on it is that in postmodern culture, that we are now in the middle of a huge crisis of belonging, that all the traditional shelters have really fallen are semi-collapsed. For instance, religion, and the Western religions in particular, the great traditions have fallen more and more into the hands and custodianship of frightened functionaries. People who are exquisite masters of the gateways know who should be let in and who shouldn't be let in, but they know little of the treasure that lies buried further in. And a great tradition has great treasure. And it's a pity that the image of the great religious traditions is so reductionist and so negative.
So as a remedy to that isolation and negativity, what about Irish culture, Celtic culture, do you offer then as a remedy?
Well, I think that one of the fascinating questions in all kind of philosophies of culture is, why does a certain constellation of consciousness or thought emerge at a certain time? Like 40 or 50 years ago, feminism as a mass movement about the liberation of woman and of the feminine would have been unimaginable. Then when the time was ripe, it surfaced. Now it seems that we're in the midst of a great surfacing of Celtic consciousness. I think this is interesting, particularly in relation to America, because I think a lot of American people have either proximate or ultimate roots in the Celtic world.
What would you say, John O'Donoghue, is the Irish imagination? How does it function?
Well, I think that the Irish imagination is very, very distinctive and very interesting. For 800 years, we were colonized by our nearest and largest neighbor. Our language was suppressed and almost taken away completely from us. So in that sense, people have often claimed that never having been allowed to participate fully in our homeland without outside intrusion, that the Irish created a kingdom of words and that language is a kind of homeland to us. It's almost reminiscent of what Heidegger said, that language is the house of being.
I'd love for you to read another poem to us, John, if you would.
Yeah, one of the early poems that I wrote is a poem called Bannacht. Bannacht is the Gaelic word for blessing. And there's another Gaelic word in the poem as well, which is the word corach. And a corach is a small canvas boat used for fishing in the west of Ireland. I believe you'd call it probably a canoe. And I'd like to read this poem. It has Celtic rhythm as a poem of blessing for our listeners. Bannacht. On the day when the weight deadens on your shoulders and you stumble, may the clay dance to balance you. And when your eyes freeze behind the grey window and the ghost of loss gets into you, may a flock of colours, indigo, red, green, and azure blue, come to awaken in you a meadow of delight. When the canvas frays in the curragh of thought and a stain of ocean blackens beneath you, may there come across the waters a path of yellow moonlight to bring you safely home. May the nourishment of the earth be yours. May the clarity of light be yours. May the fluency of the ocean be yours. May the protection of the ancestors be yours. And so may a slow wind work these words of love around you, an invisible cloak to mind your life.
That's an absolutely beautiful poem.
Well, it's a kind of a prayer poem, you know. It has the invocation in it and also some kind of poetic imagery, which is a form that the Celtic imagination often used.
As beautiful as it is to think about this populous world of the imagination, how are we to reconcile it with stories we hear, say, from Northern Ireland of great terror and violence and cruelty?
Well, I think that it's very hard to reconcile it, and there are these two realities in Ireland. And the awful thing about Northern Ireland is everyone discusses it. There are all kinds of political possibilities. There are the two sides locked in what I would call a deadly symmetry of conflict. That's what I think one of the loneliest things about most conflicts is, that there is a symmetry in it and a logic where one side perfectly echoes the other. But one must be fair and say that it is a legacy of the colonisation of Ireland, that there's a huge darkness there. And what saddens me most about it is the nameless ones who are the inheritors of the awful grief and pain and sadness, who are never mentioned in the media because, you know, it's the politics of the latest atrocity. When a new one comes, the last one is forgotten. And there's a whole deluge of held back tears in that province from all the pain and grief and sorrow that's there. So it's an awful lonesome wound in the modern Irish imagination.
You write so much in this book, Eternal Echoes, about the longing for belonging, which is mirrored in the Irish experience, north and south. Maybe you could finish this conversation with the last paragraph from your book, Eternal Echoes.
In the pulse beat is the life and the longing, all embraced in the great circle of belonging, reaching everywhere, leaving nothing and no one out. This embrace is mostly concealed from us who climb the relentless and vanishing escalator of time and journey outside where space is lonesome with distance. All we hear are whispers, all we see are glimpses. But each of us has the divinity of imagination, which warms our hearts with the beauty and depth of a world woven from glimpses and whispers, an eternal world that meets the gaze of our eyes and the echo of our voices, to assure us that from all eternity we have belonged, and to answer the question that echoes at the heart of all longing. While we are here, where is it that we are absent from?
John O'Donohue, thank you very much for sharing those thoughts with us.
Thank you, Jackie. It was a lovely conversation.
John O'Donohue is a poet and scholar. He lives in Western Ireland. His newest book is called Eternal Echoes, Exploring Our Yearning to Belong.